We're talking with Linda Howell about the Navy's announcement on UFOs, that they're going to make it easier for pilots to report encounters with unknown aircraft. I want to read something for you. This is from the New York Times. The headline of the article is Air Force Order on Saucers Sighted. Inspector General called objects serious business. UPI reports the Air Force has sent its commands a warning to treat sightings of unidentified flying objects as, quote, serious business directly related to the nation's defense. It was learned today. Air Force confirms the issuance of this directive. Then the article quotes an admiral who says that behind the scenes, high-ranking Air Force officers are soberly concerned about the UFOs, but through official secrecy and ridicule, many citizens are led to believe the unknown flying objects are nonsense, the admiral said. The date of this New York Times article, Sunday, February 28, 1960. So while we're all excited, a little bit excited about the Navy's announcement, and we're hoping that it will shed more light on what is known inside the corridors of power about these unknown intruders, maybe we should temper that with the knowledge that this has happened before. In a moment, we pick up the conversation with Linda about her groundbreaking work into animal mutilation cases, a little more about her career, milestones, and challenges, and then we'll open up the phone lines in a little bit with your calls and questions and comments. We'll be right back. Linda, before the break, you were sharing with us the story about how you're working for a TV station in Denver doing in science and environmental stories with political slants to them on occasion and public policy. And along comes an explosion of animal mutilation cases, a really strange mystery that led you on the path to where you are now. I wonder, is there any time as you were pursuing this that you said to yourself, I made a mistake. This is not for me. This is getting too crazy, too dangerous. I know you've had warnings and threats, and you've run into your share of really crazy people. Ever get to the point where you thought, maybe I need to change directions?
It's interesting that this is 40 years after that first discussion with Sheriff Tex Graves up in Sterling, and it never, ever came to a point where I felt that I could leave this story, except within the first week or two after I had decided to investigate animal mutilations because of all the headlines that were in the Rocky Mountain News and the Denver Post. And I was catching myself up. At that point, I had no knowledge about animal mutilations. So for a couple of weeks before that meeting with the sheriff, who left me with the clear implication that the only way that all of this surgery without blood around this steer on all of that powdered dust could have occurred is, as he said, this animal had to have been picked up and it had to have been put down from the air for us to see a scene like this, and that I was hitting the sentence when he said, I'll save you some time. The perpetrators of these animal mutilations are creatures from outer space. When you go back to 1979 and that decade, that is what law enforcement and ranchers were saying, that they were creatures from outer space because, and I ended up talking with some of these ranchers myself, just like the sheriff, who had seen beams of light out in pastures and had seen round glowing discs. I interviewed ranchers who would never, they said, don't turn a camera on me, don't put audio, but I'll tell you, I have seen a beam come down at night, and I have seen one of my animals rise up in a beam of light, and it scared me so much, I went back to the ranch house, and I waited until the sun came up, and when I went right back to that pasture, there was my animal lying there dead and mutilated. So there was this background with ranchers and law enforcement who knew that the phenomenon of animal mutilations going back to at least 1961 in North America, perhaps much earlier, perhaps the right to the beginning of the 20th century in Australia, and that this eyewitnesses seeing these beams and the technology, and then people like Montana, in Great Falls, there was a sheriff's office there where they had serrated edges, and they had all kinds of lights and beams that were being described to them. And so the whole UFO fabric of the animal mutilations was there right from the very beginning. And it was so funny, it was only 2 weeks into the research that I said to myself, I don't think that I want to continue investigating these animals, and went to my office with the intent of, just because I was director of the office, that I would just change to another subject that I already had on a list, because I did 3 or 4 documentaries in life, studio shows every year, and news segments. So I was ready to get out of what was feeling like a very uncomfortable story. And I still remember, I can see the key going in to the lock on my office door, and that it was 9 o'clock, and by noon I had taken 2 or 3 phone calls that left me more determined than ever before that I was going to get to the bottom of the animal mutilations. And there were strange things like that that happened, George, and it probably have happened to you, where you think that you have free will, but this entire 40 years has been as if I was put on a path that had a certain destiny to keep going. And after those first 2 weeks, no, I never, ever wanted to turn away from the story that ultimately comes to the question, who are we, Homo sapien humans on the surface of this planet? Who made us? Who manipulated DNA and already evolving primates to put us here, which I've read in more than one document of the government? And interestingly enough, you read from that 1960s Air Force article. Well, a decade before that, I have I posted it earlier tonight at my news, Earth Files, because I wanted to acknowledge another headline just in the last week or so. Why the idea of alien life now seems inevitable and possibly imminent. And this has come from the conversation recently that also summarized from the Griffith Review. And the reporter on this is Cathal O'Connell. He's a researcher at the Vincent Hospital at the University of Melbourne in Australia. And it is an extremely good article that is now circulating around with that title, Why the Idea of Alien Life Now Seems Inevitable and Possibly Imminent. Well, I put together a report tonight at Earth Files, which is there, and I included the photograph of page 1 of 9 that I have in photographic form that I've had for 15, 18 years. Top Secret Project Aquarius, formerly named Project Gleam, from 16 volumes about UFOs and IACs, which are identified aerial craft, a briefing paper shown to President Jimmy Carter during his administration from 1977 to 1981. And this one page that I included is about Project Aquarius. And this is literal to a document that goes back to having been put together in the 1950s, a decade before what you read. And this shows how much our government has hidden. Quote, this top secret ORCON pro-word dance contains 16 volumes of documented information collected from the beginning of the United States investigation of unidentified flying objects and identified alien craft. And that implies that they have identified something having to do with the UFO phenomena. The project was originally established in 1953 by order of President Eisenhower under control of the National Security Council and MJ-12, that is the Majestic 12 group, appointed by President Truman in 1947, having to do with UFOs and ETs. In 1966, the project's name was changed from Project Gleam to Project Aquarius. The project was funded by CIA confidential funds, non-appropriated. The project was originally classified secret, but was upgraded to its present classification in December of 1969 after Project Blue Book was closed. The purpose of Project Aquarius was to collect all scientific, technological, medical, and intelligence information from UFO, IAC sightings, and our contacts with alien life forms. This orderly file of collected information has been used to advance the United States space program, and the preceding briefing is an historical account of the United States government's investigation of aerial phenomena, recovered alien aircraft, and contacts with extraterrestrial life forms, close quote, page 1 of 9, and those 9 pages, George, are simply a skeletal outline from the 16 volumes about UFOs and IACs that you and I and others and Bob Lazar and on have heard about, the 16 volumes that have been accumulated, and by today they may be 56 volumes.
Let me ask you this. How do we know they're ETs? We know they're aliens. They look like aliens. The reports from eyewitnesses, and you know, their appearances vary from encounter to encounter. We know that they have craft that we can't duplicate. They have materials that we can't duplicate. They're others, but are we sure that they're ETs? And I ask it in this context because, you know, the people that have worked with and interviewed and sources have had over the years, they call them aliens. It's almost like a placeholder name, the assumption being that they're ETs because they don't really have an explanation.
Well, in my second book, my first book was An Alien Harvest, about all of my work in animal mutilations. And then the next book, a two-volume book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 1, Facts and Eyewitnesses, followed by Glimpses, Volume 2, High Strangeness. I did a taxonomy, largely in color, from illustrations that I had gathered from people in the human abduction syndrome about their often conscious face-to-face with non-humans, and also their unconscious or abductions, and then memories in dreams. And it's many, many pages in my book, Glimpses, Volume 1, that show various types. And that book came out in 1994. And so between 1979, when I started A Strange Harvest, the documentary on the animal mutilations, and 1994, I had moved to human abductions as added to the animal mutilations and had been collecting all of this material. And by then, by 1994, it was becoming clear to me that we were largely dealing with androids, clones, or robots. A robot technically is made out of inorganic matter. An android is organic. Both do robotic chores for something that I would call a prime intelligence. And that I began with that book and then evolving today to try to understand what the relationship would be between prime intelligences who have conflict with each other, who can then manufacture androids, clones, robots, a menagerie from organic or self-activating software that would fall into a category of extremely advanced materials, that would be used on not just our planet, but maybe many planets throughout the Milky Way galaxy, so that the prime intelligence does not have to do the traveling. And we are already at that intersection where we are beginning to build AI to have conversations with humans and to do scientific work. And that's us. Imagine if you have 1,000 years on us, and many assessments that I have seen in documents and in a few people that I have talked to say that some of the technologies that we have recovered or they have been placed in our hands on purpose, sort of like Trojan horse actions, to put humans on paths of certain technological evolution, that the estimate is that at least some of the intelligences interacting with Earth have technologies at least 1,000 years beyond us. And if all of that is true, then the idea that what we are dealing with most of the time, whether it's in craft that are doing 90-degree turns at 10,000 miles an hour, or something else that is interacting with a human and the human thinks that it's dealing with something biological but certainly not human, then you have that range of categories. These would be made for specific work on this planet, in this gravity, in this atmosphere, and they would fall into the categories of androids, biological robots, clones, a whole different category. Clones are identical, organic duplication. And then the robot, which could be self-activating software of a very advanced nature that might be useful on the moon and other places beyond Earth. So now the issue is, who precisely are the prime intelligences that would make these menageries of androids, clones, and robots? And that's where you get to that often cited division of humanoids, tall or with hair or without hair, but humanoid, sort of human-looking. And then something that is in a reptilian category, and something that is in the so-called ebon category of gray skin. And there are other things. Insects might be one of the more important categories that we know very little about. The Ronald Reagan briefing at Camp David, which was released about, I think it was 2007, in the big, huge saga of alleged official or unofficial DIA, CIA, NSA content about UFOs and ETs on the web, that one of the documents was an alleged transcript of William Casey, appointed by Ronald Reagan to be the director of CIA when Reagan took office January 20th of 1981. And the transcript is dated March 6th to 8th, 1981, at Camp David. And the entire transcript is Casey with NSA, CIA, DIA, possibly NRO, analysts there to give a briefing to President Reagan about five different types of extraterrestrial biological entities. And as Casey and the briefers break down these five in this transcript, the top of the list of five are the Ebens. And they are described to Reagan as being extraterrestrial biological entities from Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2 that have the ability to manufacture genetically manipulate, clone, and every other way of creating various types of life forms that they want by hybridization, mixing and matching genes.
I'm going to have to stop you there, Linda. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll take a couple of calls and questions. I have one more for you before we go to the phones. We're talking with Linda Moulton Howe, our friend and colleague and collaborator who's been investigating the kind of mysteries that we discuss on this program for a long time, is perhaps the foremost expert on the animal mutilation phenomena, has investigated hundreds, thousands of cases. You don't hear about animal mutilations as much as back in the 70s and 80s, but they're still happening. When we come back, we open up the phone lines. I have one or two more questions I want to ask of Linda, and then we'll see what's on your mind as well. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. Linda, you've produced, published, written some really wonderful books. I'm looking at a copy of An Alien Harvest right now. Thick paper, beautiful photographs, a hardbound, an excellent production, and just a great piece of work. as well as glimpses of other realities, and you've had some films. What do you say to people who accuse you of being in it for the money? Because there's that comes up whenever you publish a book, like, oh, yeah, those UFO people, they're really getting rich off of UFO books.
No. It's a preposterous accusation. They'd have to climb in our shoes to understand. You end up spending way more, usually, than anything, because I have been determined to use the pressure of fact, trying to get to the bottom of what is a universe size issue. It is, the more you're in it, the thousands more facets come. And one of the threads that I wanted to share with you from this whole question on animal mutilations that I think is so important is that back in 1980, if you remember, there was something called the Rommel Report. A former FBI person who was hired in Raton, New Mexico, to do an investigation of animal mutilations.
Yeah, totally explained it all. Totally explained it, right?
Oh, my Lord. Yeah. And he had told me when I interviewed him for my documentary, A Strange Harvest, we were filming him, I think, in October of 1979. His report did not come out until May of 1980. So at that September or October interview, he told me with great arrogance, I am going to prove that there is nothing to the animal mutilations except predators. And so he was showing all of his cards right there at the beginning of getting $19,000 for an alleged former FBI objective investigation, and it was phony from the get-go. Well, here is a payback that came to me about 23 years later. I had done A Strange Harvest. The film had a huge audience. I received an Emmy for that. And then I continue to do a project for HBO and all of these things I've written about in Alien Harvest. And from the strange Rommel and his report on predators all the way to 2003, I was in Philadelphia. I get a phone call. It is a man who introduces himself as a veterinarian in Bentonville, Arkansas, and says, I have wanted to talk with you ever since you did the film A Strange Harvest to tell you that I am the veterinarian who was working with the Bentonville, Arkansas sheriff who Kenneth Rommel used in his report to say that it was all predator because they had put a star scope on a cow that they had purchased, and in the night they had shown and brought a public a media conference together to say, look, this is what happened. He said, while they were doing that, Linda, I was doing two or three necropsies every day for the same Bentonville, Arkansas sheriff. And Linda, their bodies had no surgery on the outside, but when I opened them up in necropsy, bladders were missing, lungs were missing, trachea were missing, kidneys were missing. Without any surgery on the external part of the body, he said it was not possible. And those are the reports that I was given to the Bentonville sheriff. And that shows the schizophrenia that has been the hallmark since World War II, and you could go back before, of a disconnect between the reality, between the truth, between what can be proved versus policies of lies and denial. And that, to me, was one of the most satisfying things in the odd way, to have a veterinarian seek me out 20-some years later to tell me the truth of what was happening, of the very lie that was being presented by the former FBI guy and the sheriff's office to get the public and the media off their backs. That's the truth from a vet.
I want to quote John Keel in one of his books, Disneyland of the Gods. He wrote that in the past few years, a handful of investigators have begun to try to view the whole scene rather than isolated fragments of it. One of Britain's leading ufologists says there's considerable evidence that UFOs appearing in our skies have some connection with psychic phenomena, as well as helicopters vainly chasing dinosaurs, the posses tracking down Bigfoot, hordes of teenagers sitting on hilltops scanning the skies for flying saucers, and the patient cameramen shivering in the cold night air at Loch Ness are all engaged in the same pursuit, but they don't know it. What do you think?
Yes.
A unified theory of weirdness?
Yeah, well, the phenomena, as John Keel, his perfect title in one of his books, Our Haunted Planet. It has been haunted for millennia because Homo sapiens only stood up as a standing up primate 2 million years ago. If that Defense Intelligence Agency analyst who sought me out, and why he sought me out is because in my third book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangeness, I have a whole huge, large chapter with abductees who had experience with what they called the resurrection technology. These are tubes with light, and that clones of anything can be generated, full-blown, no baby, period. And that this was, according to the DIA guy, the biggest secret that they were hiding. And that the, when he got a call from a colleague who said, in 1998, you have to get this new book by Linda Moulton Howe, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangeness, and gave him the page number, and he said, I turned to it, and I nearly fell on the floor. We thought that this was an area of dealing with UFOs and ETs that no one would ever learn, and we were going to keep it from everybody. And you have illustrations. You have transcripts, you have maps, and on and on. And he said, I could not believe it. Well, that is the, that to me, the ability to clone any kind of body that you want and then be able to put life force into it that you can control is one of the more complex and sophisticated aspects of what we're dealing with. And that when you go to there and make that be a bookmark, a bookend in how difficult this is, you realize that for at least, as he said, 270 million years, there's been all kinds of other intelligences using this planet and the solar system. And that there are aspects of our government who know that. And that the government has taken the position that you and I and all humans on the surface of the Earth now would collapse if we knew that we had been made through genetic manipulation, that animal mutilations and human abductions were real, and that everything would fall apart. I think it's exactly the opposite for exactly the question you just gave. There are so many facets of Earth now in the and in the past that relate to the alien presence. Alien presence is a catch-all for everything that you listed and more, plus the intelligences that are responsible for all of these various facets of phenomena. And then you put it in the bigger box where physics seems to be headed rapidly, that this isn't just one universe, that there are many, many, many universes, and that each universe has many, many, many dimensions associated with it, and that through face-to-face telepathic communication between military and intel people who have been able to take telepathic download from intelligences, not all people can do it, and from the abductees, a picture is growing that says their technology moves point to point. One physicist told me that he had read a very complex document in conjunction with collaboration with some non-humans trying to explain what happens, and says, if we're in a 13.8, 13.9 billion light year universe, they don't spend time. They don't spend Euclidean geometry time. They have the ability to move point to point by being able to manipulate magnetic fields. And when you know what you're doing, if you are at Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2, and you want to move 40 light years to Earth, you go out of this universe matter dimension to another dimension that will, like a cushion shot in a pool table, it'll put you back, if you know how to calculate the math, at Earth. And so in all of this, from the idea of dimensions, multiple timelines, multiple universes, the bigger box that all of this pushes you to, and why I've never, ever been able to leave trying to understand this, if the universe, as some physicists today are beginning to hypothesize, is actually a hologram, and one of Bud Hopkins' abduction people wrote a big book called The Holographic Universe, Michael Talbot, and said the entire book was a download from the ETs, trying to explain that this universe was made, was constructed for a purpose, and that if that were true, you cannot have a hologram projected within the universe. You have to have the holographic universe projected from another dimension outside of this universe. How big, George, how big is the box of all of these many facets, this 16-layered chess game? And ultimately, what is the creator, the divine field of everything behind it? I cannot imagine spending my life on anything more exciting and fascinating than trying to understand who we are through all of these layers that take us out to not only this universe, but to other universes. And that seems to me to be the true reality of the landscape that we've been trying to understand, and all of the phenomena of the centuries.
I'm with you on that score, even though the big box is too big for my pointy little head to get to understand. I'm with you on the pursuit. Yeah. Let's take a call or two real quick. First time caller, Stephen in Pahrump, Nevada. Hey, Stephen, you're on with Linda Moulton Howe.
Hi, George. Hi, Linda. I want to first thank you for all the years and effort and time you put into ufology to share with us. I want to thank you very much for that. I've been interested in ufology for about 50 years. Past 25 years, I've been gathering information. I've sent you a couple of links, George, a couple of times on Messenger. And Linda, I sent you a link regarding that case in Bolivia, regarding the farmer losing like 20 cattle, them getting videotape of the lights and it being on the news.
Right. Was that the case where the it was at least a dozen or more cattle ended up in a freshly filled water tank? And the water tank was 30 feet off the ground. I think it was Bolivia or Argentina. And that it was one of those cases that left everybody completely flabbergasted, because there is no way that 12 or 15 cattle could end up inside of the water of a 30-foot high water tank unless something had the ability to lift those animals all at the same time and put them into that water tank. And that's how strange the animal mutilations have been in South America, Central America, and Mexico.
Right. And so with me gathering this information daily, sharing it on social media, I get to see what a lot of people are thinking and their views. And the thing I keep questioning is regarding disclosure. If the government military is saying it's a national security issue, I take it to mind that the reason why it is because to acknowledge it is to open up a big can of worms to say that they're flying the skies as they wish, they're doing cattle mutilations, they're doing an abduction, and there's nothing they could do to stop that and to assure the public would be safe. So they they have to keep it quiet. I've talked to people who say they believe in UFOs, but they don't want to know the truth. They don't want the government to tell them that.
Stephen, let's let Linda respond because we're just about out of time. So thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
I know that the official explanation for keeping all of us dumb and blind in the dark for decades is to keep everything from falling apart and panic and all of that. But everything that life has taught me is the opposite. When you are lied to, when you are left out of truth, when you do not know the facts, you are weakened. It is only when you know everything and then you have to deal with it that you are stronger. And that, to me, is exactly the question before us as we are in 2019 headed for 2020. If this world and all of the power brokers would level with all 7.6 billion people on this planet all at once and let the chips fall where they may, I personally think it would strengthen humanity, not weaken us. I do not think that large populations on this planet, in India, for example, would have any problem. In fact, I think there would be big cheers going up from huge segments of population who would be saying, yeah, I know that there are UFOs. I know that there are ETs. There's a huge inertial population on the planet that has been disconnecting from government policies of lies and denial. To not make it official is to persist in a concocted planet. This is a concocted planet, a concocted planet of lies and manipulation by power brokers for centuries. If we're going to survive ourselves in the 21st century, we have got to get on the same square with the same knowledge that the power brokers and the governments have, or I do not think that this species has a very good chance of surviving.
Linda Howe, always great to talk to you. I really appreciate
it. That will make us stronger, George.
Absolutely. We're going to both stick at it. And I know you're not a regular contributor to the program, but George Norrie and I both appreciate you calling in from time to time and let us know what you're up to.
All right. And thank you. And I look forward to seeing you at some conference upcoming. Thank you.
There's a whole bunch of them, so we'll see you soon. Thanks, Linda. Coming up next, James Fox, Lee Spiegel to talk about their massive project. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM.